from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. No one is madder than me, President Obama said yesterday about the rocky rollout of Obamacare, the big federal online exchange for health insurance on a very rough road so far. The president says, hang in there. It's worth it. It will get better. But there's been a lot of mess so far. The consequences still unknown this hour on Point. The terrible launch of healthcare.gov and where it takes Obamacare. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. With all that time and millions, is this the best we can do? Have you tried to use it? Have you made it through? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will talk in this hour with a big computer maven about the troubles and with a healthcare insurer who's looking, trying to work with it. But first, joining me now from Washington is Jenny Gold. She covers the healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News. Jenny, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me back.
And with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Jonathan Cohn. He's senior editor at The New Republic, covering public policy and politics, author of Sick, The Untold Story of America's Healthcare Crisis and the People Who Pay the Price. He's been watching all this very closely. Jonathan, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Jenny, as we sit here this morning, we're going to learn a lot in this hour, but what do you know right now about how healthcare.gov is working today? Is it fixed? Is it half fixed? Is it still buggy as can be?
Well, as the president said yesterday, there is no sugarcoating this. The rollout has been very rocky. So far, few people have been able to enroll. Now, the administration has said they've made some early fixes and there's some incremental improvement, but it's not really working. And honestly, I'm not sure we know all of the bugs that are going to happen. They say while there have been 19 million visitors to healthcare.gov, that shows a huge amount of interest in signing up for health insurance, there have been fewer than 500,000 applications filed. And that includes all of the state exchanges as well. And that doesn't mean that those people have actually enrolled in coverage. It just means they've managed to set up an application, set up their account.
Jonathan, I've been frustrated with the difficulty of understanding exactly what's going on. I went to the site this morning. Looks great. You can punch in and get a few levels down. I didn't fill out the whole application. I'm told that it's once you do that that the trouble begins. Once you're on, if you can get on, and today it was easy. But then people are just running into all kinds of snags. I mean, is this a fiasco? Is it half a fiasco? What's your assessment of the federal site? We know the state enrollment's different, Jonathan.
Yeah, no, I think the word fiasco is appropriate. I've heard words like disaster, other similar words. This has gone very badly. They did not do a good job of designing the federal website, and it's got lots of problems. It is better than it was. They are making incremental progress, and you can get through. And some people are getting through. There are people making their way through the process. And I have been encouraging people. I actually wouldn't get too hung up on the numbers for now, among other things. There was never an expectation that many people would enroll at the very beginning anyway. But clearly the site is not working very well. And they do have a little time to get this right, but it's not there yet.
We're going to look at what's going on technically. I have to say I've just always found that a kind of absurd defense of the problems, that we didn't anticipate this many people. I mean, this is a national system for healthcare where the administration itself has loudly proclaimed what desperate need there is and demand. I mean, who wouldn't expect a lot of people? It's a big country.
Yeah, well, I think two things are true. I think it is on the one hand true that the level of interest actually surpassed their best estimates. I think that's true. I think they didn't anticipate quite this many people jumping on right away. And I think that added to the strain of the system. But you're absolutely right is that they did, they had to know there would be a lot of traffic. And traffic isn't the problem. I mean, it's a problem. But this isn't simply a capacity issue. If the issue with the system was that it simply didn't have enough bandwidth, it didn't have enough servers, people couldn't move through the system, that would have been fixed in 2 or 3 days. These problems go much deeper.
Let's hear the president yesterday in the Rose Garden saying, this is great insurance and you should get on and don't be distracted by the problems with it's more than a website, but the website problems, said the president.
The website that's supposed to make it easy to apply for and purchase the insurance is not working the way it should for everybody. And there's no sugarcoating it. The website has been too slow. People have been getting stuck during the application process. And I think it's fair to say that nobody's more frustrated by that than I am.
The president yesterday, it is easy to imagine that he'd be pretty frustrated. It's hard to understand how a project so long in the making could come out in such a rugged, rough way. Jenny Gold, Jonathan Cohn, please stand by. With us right now from San Francisco is Armando Fox. He's professor in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences at UC Berkeley. Spends a lot of time thinking, talking, teaching about projects just like, or much like, this one. Armando Fox, thank you very much for being with us today.
I'm happy to be here.
So you're watching this along with the rest of us. Does it make sense to you as a computer guy how this has come out? Did it need to be this bad?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I don't think it needed to be this bad. And as you mentioned, I do teach this material. I practice some of this. In fact, you can take some of the course material that my colleagues and I have developed for free online. And it's not just the fact that the kinds of problems that have been reported with the site are problems that generally software people know how to solve. You know, the problems of traffic, of being able to add more servers on demand as traffic swells.
Yeah.
These are technologies that are, I would say, fairly well understood in the software world. I think what's perhaps a little more concerning, and, you know, I have several of my colleagues out there in the wider world have done more direct work on this than I have already, is they've been looking at the actual code, much of which, as you might know, is available online. Because the code was developed by a civilian agency at public expense, the government had originally posted this code on GitHub, which is a large sort of shared repository site where a lot of programmers post their open source code. And although they have since withdrawn it, in part because of a raft of bug reports that they got, a lot of people have been able to look at some of the code that was in the problematic sections of the site. And unfortunately, the code really reflects some practices that if my students use these practices in their course projects, they would probably get point docked.
Armando, explain. The government put it up so what, to invite comment from the software community? Hey, here's where we're headed. What do you think? That sort of thing?
You know, I don't know if that was the government's specific motivation, but I can tell you that that's the culture in the software world. If you're developing code that you don't have reason to keep proprietary or under wraps, there have long been places, and GitHub is now the most prominent of them, where you can post your code both to have a backup copy for yourself and to allow your direct collaborators as well as other interested colleagues to sort of look at and comment and send you suggestions and feedback about the code and even directly suggest modifications online. And in fact, within the computer security community, it's been well known for many years that the best way to make your code secure is to release it for public review before it goes into production so a lot of different eyeballs can take a look at it. In fact, there's kind of a saying in the open source community that given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow. Someone in the wider world is going to see something that many other people might miss.
And maybe know how to fix it. This is CGI Federal. This is a Canadian company based in Montreal with the biggest contract responsible for the architecture of huge parts of this. You say there are elementary kind of problems here? Like what?
Well, you know, one immediate thing, I did have some time yesterday to start looking through the code on GitHub. As I said, although the government subsequently withdrew the code, by that time other developers had made copies of it, which are still available, by the
mm-hmm,
way.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I was not able to find any tests. Now, it's not to say that no testing was done, but modern software practice, the tests are part of the code base, and they sort of travel along with it. So where are the tests? Why aren't they part of the code base? In fact, we teach our students to write tests before they start writing the code and to continue the testing and coding process together during all phases of the design. So I saw no evidence of that reflected in the code base.
Let me ask you about a couple of features. The large number of visitors, should that be a problem?
It should not be a problem, by and large. You know, there's, in general, and this has been pointed out before, when you've got a system that has to integrate or talk to other back-end systems, for example, the Affordable Care Act portal has to talk to, so to speak, the IRS site.
Yeah.
And it's true that if those back-end sites are older or become a traffic bottleneck, that may limit the number of users that you can take. But, you know, you can farm those tasks off and come back to them and set them aside in such a way that they don't sort of block the head of the line for everybody else. The rest of the site, you can accommodate a great many users by essentially making many copies of the site. And, you know, this is a technology that is now so commonplace that Amazon allows you to do it by renting servers for, you know, 8 or 10 cents an hour. Anybody with a credit card could do this.
Working with other databases. I mean, there are a lot here, the IRS and so on. That sounds like it could be complicated.
That could be in the position of facing sudden surges of unexpected traffic. So this is not a new problem, nor is it an untested technology. These are problems that I think the software community has a good handle on.
What about, if I may ask you, what about working with other databases? I mean, they've got to interact with Social Security and the IRS and so on. Is that something that's like epically difficult or unusual?
Oh, sorry, I lost you there. Is that something?
Working with other databases. So many databases have to be pulled together here to verify income and so on.
Sure. When you've got to talk to other systems, especially as I'm sure these systems are, probably somewhat older, maybe they're not as fast or as responsive. Again, that's always a challenge. But imagine if you're trying to serve a lot of people and some of those people are asking you to do tasks that could take a long time, you don't hold up the line while you do those tasks. You tell those people, I'm going to get that task started, and why don't you check back in a few minutes and the task is complete, and in the meantime, I'm going to continue and serve the next customer. The software equivalent of how you do that is quite well understood, and if I were designing a website that I knew had to talk to other systems, I would use mechanisms like that so that at least the front door stays open and you can get more people through the site, even if what you're telling those people is, we've received your information, you need to check back in, you know, a few minutes or a half hour until we get a response from these slower databases.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Obamacare's rugged rollout, asking why the terrible start online and what it will take to fix it. Jenny Gold is with us from Kaiser Health News. Jonathan Cohn from The New Republic. Armando Fox from UC Berkeley teaches computer science and big software projects there. Armando Fox in California, just a couple more questions. First, I'm baffled by how this could unfold in this way. I mean, how do you make sense of the fact that there's been a lot put into this, hundreds of millions of dollars, we're told, and experienced people working on it, and we could have this difficulty? And second, how does something like this get fixed once it's already out there, it's supposed to be in use, and yet it's not working right? How could it happen? How does it get fixed?
Well, you know, in terms of how it could happen, Tom, you mentioned that experienced people worked on it. Unfortunately, I have had a chance to look at least some of the code that was deliberately publicly released, and I have to tell you that a lot of the practices I'm seeing in that code don't really say experienced people to me, or at least not people who are thoroughly versed in modern software engineering techniques. I mean, just as a simple example, there are some basic code quality tools that will sort of automatically analyze your code and look for bad habits, if you will. And a lot of the code in the code base doesn't even pass muster with tools like that, tools that we require our own students to use even in semester-long projects. So, you know, I don't know a lot about CGI or the kind of training of the people who work there, the process by which they won the bid, or what kind of experience they were required to demonstrate in order to win the bid. But, you know, when we hire programmers or do projects, one thing we ask them for is, please show us your code portfolio. You know, if you're hiring an artist or an architect, you want to see examples of actual work they've done in the past. If you're hiring a software designer or developer, you'd want to see examples of software that they have written in the past. And using the code that's been released as an example, I have to say, isn't terribly inspiring.
Okay, so we'll put a little question mark by the question of how this could have been handed off to a group if they're going to do things that aren't even taught in elementary computer software database code classes. What about the fix? If you look at this, how do you fix a moving train like this?
Well, look, the bright side, the silver lining here, Tom, is just as the modern software community has developed practices and skills that would have avoided many of the problems that we're seeing, in my opinion, that same community has evolved techniques for essentially, you know, fixing the moving car without taking the tires off of it. So, you know, in terms of how is this going to get fixed, I would say that, you know, it's a challenge. There's a lot of people who are relying on it and so forth, but it's not a moonshot kind of a challenge. I mean, there are techniques that are well known that we can use to essentially keep the site live at some level while in place repairing some of the problems that we're seeing in the site. Having said that, I would feel better knowing that the people who are doing that work are people who are trained in modern software engineering techniques for software as a service and who have dealt with high traffic sites before. Every major company whose websites you use daily, Netflix, Amazon, Microsoft, yeah, eBay, PayPal, they all have to deal with problems like this. That this is not a new occurrence for them, right? For software, this is a way of life. This is what they do. The idea that you're going to have many more users tomorrow, you're going to have a sale and be inundated, this is, the techniques for doing this are well understood. It's not to say that they're not challenging to do. You need skilled and experienced software engineers to do them. But it's not insurmountable, right? This can be fixed.
Okay.
I just think that it didn't need to happen in the first place, or at least not as badly.
Let's go to our listeners and to our reporters. Bill in Woburn, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It just occurs to me that a lot of the noise, and I would even call it hysteria, about the Affordable Care Act website is just that. I was an early adopter to eBay in particular, and I can't tell you how many times I went through 5, 6, 7 steps in eBay, and the whole thing froze up, and all the information was lost. And I know this is not totally analogous to that, but I think that this is the way things go. I mean, I've been using computers since 1984, and they're not perfect. I mean, we're accustomed to that now, but this is a massively complicated program, and you can enroll over the phone or in person. So it's just, I think a lot of this hysteria is fueled by the Republicans, and it's being picked up by the media, and a lot of it's simply unnecessary.
Well, but what are you thinking with that perspective, Bill? And I get it, but when our computer guy out of California, Armando, is saying, elemental problems that shouldn't have been here, what are you thinking?
Well, I think that when the iPhone, whatever it was, when I came out and you had melting maps, that seemed like a pretty big glitch, and it wasn't as serious as this, but it was serious enough to damage the Apple brand briefly. So, I can see that, but I also understand that this is a system that's never been made before. So,
you're willing to cut it some slack. We've got it, Bill. Jonathan Cohn, our first caller says this is hysteria. Well, I mean, there's certainly excitement about it because, it was supposed to work and it hasn't worked. Is that hysteria, Jonathan?
Well, I think your caller is right to have a little perspective here. Software, often, new websites, they do often have problems. And I do think that it's easy to get carried away with the state of things. On the other hand, there is a policy question here, which is that if the site is not working well within a certain amount of time, as we get closer to the end of the year, we start to run into issues of, remember, for the system to work, we really need to make sure enough younger and healthy people sign up for it. These are the worry, which I think is a real worry, is that when you have a system that isn't very quick, that is hard to use, the only people who will make it through will be the people who need insurance the most. And that could cause problems for the stability of the whole system. Now, I think even there it's easy to get hysterical about what might happen. The worst case scenarios may not be as bad as people think. So I think both, yes, we need some perspective, and I think it's important to cut some slack, and there is some time to get this right. But there actually are some real worries here, not just – this isn't I suspect there's a lot of political grandstanding going on, a lot of people exploiting this situation for political gain. That doesn't mean they're wrong.
Jenny Gold, remind us of the calendar here and how it relates to the ultimate health of the Affordable Care Act itself. What's needed in terms of volume of sign-up, by whom, by when, Jenny?
So the administration is hoping that 7 million people will enroll in the new healthcare exchanges this year, and they're hoping that under 3 million of those will be young and healthy people. And like Jonathan mentioned earlier, the concern here is that only people who really, really need health insurance will sign up, will go through this long and difficult process of the website in order to get coverage, whereas young and healthy people who maybe don't think they need it that much won't take the time to enroll.
If they think it's a mess in there,
if it takes too long for them. So that is the concern. Now, as long as people sign up by December 15th, they'll have coverage beginning January 1st. So if you want coverage beginning at the beginning of the year, you just have to enroll by December 15th. In order to meet the mandate, which is that everyone has to have coverage by the end of March, you have to have signed up by mid-February. So there is kind of a tight calendar here. I've heard if the administration can get this fixed by, say, mid-November or Thanksgiving, maybe everything will be okay. People tend to sign up for things at the last minute anyways. A lot of people are last-minuters. If you've ever signed up for employer coverage, often people wait till the very last moment, and that's fine. The problem is if the site really isn't working past Thanksgiving, then it's going to be really hard for people to sign up. And that's when the administration, may really have to think about pushing back some of those deadlines.
deadlines for sign-up, deadlines for penalties for those who don't sign up?
So there's certainly discussion going on about whether open enrollment could be extended beyond the end of March. And there's also a discussion of, is it fair to have people required to buy coverage and to pay a penalty by the end of March if they really can't sign up? So those are ideas that are certainly floating around. The administration hasn't said one way or the other what they're planning to do about that. And I think it'll depend on what kind of fixes this tech surge, as they're calling it, will bring about.
I mean, you can talk about whipped up hysteria, but these are real challenges. If they don't get the right volume in, the pump doesn't work right when it comes to insurance. I think we all understand that. Here was the president in the Rose Garden again talking yesterday about bringing the tech surge to bear on this.
We've had some of the best IT talent in the entire country join the team, and we're well into a tech surge to fix the problem. And we are confident that we will get all the problems fixed.
Well, what do you think about that, Armando? When the federal government, when the president says we got a tech surge coming here, what do you hear? What do you imagine that means? Do you see it?
Well, I have to say, when the president said we have the best and brightest assigned to work on this problem, it kind of made me wonder where those people were when the site was being built. And, you know, I appreciate our caller's point of view. I also remember eBay was very rocky when it started out. But, you know, that was in 1995. We've learned a lot in the 15 or so years since that happened. And, you know, I remember the iPhone maps being all screwed up. But what did people do about that? They went back to Google Maps, which was excellent. So, again, these aren't new problems. You know, the kinds of problems, and by the way, for the record, I'm supportive of the Affordable Care Act. That's the reason I'm so frustrated that the rollout's been so technically rocky. It's just because it didn't need to be. We clearly have the people and the experience to avoid or to fix those problems, and if the president's saying that those people are now being brought on board, that's great. The faster it gets fixed, the better. I just believe that it could have been largely avoided to begin with, because none of the problems we're seeing are new challenges. These are problems that have already been solved multiple times within the community, and for which the solutions are no secret.
It's hard to understand why that expertise would not have been brought to bear already here. Armando Fox in San Francisco, I know we have to let you go there, in the Computer Sciences Department at UC Berkeley. Thank you so much for being with us today, Armando.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
Let's go to Philip in Charleston, South Carolina. Philip, you're on.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to make, I think, the simple point that at this point, at this stage, what are we, 10 days into it, I think it's nonsensical to suggest that this is a debacle.
We're 21 days into it, Philip. 21 days.
21 days, I beg your pardon. Even still, I'm presuming that part of the reason that the rollout was several months in advance was for reasons like this, that there might be some technical problems. And even if I had signed up on the day the rollout started 21 days ago, I still wouldn't be getting my insurance till January. Is that not accurate?
Jenny, if he signed up October 1st, when would he get his insurance?
That's correct. The earliest that insurance can begin in the exchanges is January 1st.
But, Philip, if there have been enough problems that we can't accumulate, that the government doesn't accumulate the number of enrollees, including healthy ones, that it takes to make this work, isn't that a problem?
Absolutely, and well understood. But I think at this point, it is a little, you know, a case of much ado about nothing.
Nothing. I don't know about nothing, but you're a generous citizen. One more right here, Ronaldo in Chicago. Ronaldo, you're on.
I believe that there were glitches, but I believe that this is a bunch of media hype. I believe that they're not getting the amount of people that they need or thought they were going to get to sign up for this. And I just don't see, if they extend it, that what the budget battle was all about. This thing is not ready for prime time. And just your first guess, if he's hiring all these good people to fix it, why weren't they there the first time? And also, with the $400 million that we've spent, are we going to be spending more money just to get the website correct?
Well, it's a big thing. It's a big project to get it up on the rails, but those are reasonable questions. Ronaldo, I appreciate your call. One more. I'll come to you, Jonathan. Lisa in Lexington, Kentucky. Lisa, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, I am lucky enough to have a state exchange, and it seems like the majority of the problems are with the federal exchange.
True.
I actually Googled CRG. They are a Canadian company, but they purchased an American company that's been running the Medicaid and Medicare system for quite some time.
Yeah, that was supposed to be part of their qualification here, I guess.
Yeah, so, I mean, my thing is that we've waited a long time for this, and the federal site that's having problems is having to pick up all the people in the 26 states who refuse to participate. And, you know, you're talking about millions of people, thousands of insurance companies. We've all waited 50 years. If it takes It took a couple of years to roll out Social Security and Medicare to begin with. It's going to take some time, and I think people just need to be patient. You know, we've waited a long time for this. We might have to wait a little bit longer. You know, as far as policy issues, perhaps if our entire government had been working towards having a good rollout instead of, you know, the shenanigans going on about delaying and defunding portions and stopping it altogether,
yep.
Maybe we would have had a more successful rollout.
Lisa, I get that perspective. I absolutely do. Jonathan Cohn, I mean, ironies abound here. Lisa says Democrats, at least, have wanted this for so long, and now here it is. You know, the New York Times calling it horrendously botched is hardly what Democrats would have hoped for. On the other hand, you've got Republicans screaming about this, but they wanted to defund it in the first place and tried to and did and threw all kinds of, roadblocks down. It's funny to be, you know, screaming and yelling now that it's got problems.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, your callers just now. I think it points something out. You know, in the media, those of us who have been using words like fiasco and disaster, I think that's partly informed. I think it has less to do with the fact that the site isn't working yet and more to do with the fact that it's clear if you talk to people on the inside, they're not sure when it's going to work exactly. There are some real concerns about deep fundamental design issues. I think they're optimistic the system will be up and running in time for that window that Jenny mentioned. Mm-hmm. But there's some uncertainty, and I think that has a lot of people concerned. But what is interesting to me and is that I think the Washington, the reporters, the people in the middle of this are very concerned. I've been surprised, and I will say as someone who supports the law pleasantly, at how patient the American people seem. You know, we've got some new polls out. And I think the polls suggest basically, on the one hand, people, yeah, this thing hasn't worked very well so far, but okay, well, you know, it's a website and they'll get it right eventually. Let's give it some more time. That's not how everybody feels. You have people who never liked the law who see this as proof that they were right. But in general, I suspect the attitude of your callers who say, look, we've waited a long time for this. We can wait a little while longer. You know, that's not, you know, for all of the problems the website has, that makes a certain amount of sense.
Jenny Gold, are we in that kind of situation, though? I mean, there's also the sort of risk here that it doesn't, if it takes too long for it to sort of get its act together, that the numbers just don't work.
I mean, that's absolutely a risk. But I think what's important to remember is it's been a pretty bad couple of weeks for Republicans. They have not been looking too good. Their approval numbers are down. And this is a great thing to glom onto. I mean, the website is really pretty rocky. This is a big reason to be upset about the Affordable Care Act. That makes a lot of sense. I think at the same time, it's important to remember that, you know, the president also has a point, which is that this is not about the fundamentals of the Affordable Care Act and whether or not it's going to work. This is a website. Now, the website is crucial for the functioning of the Affordable Care Act, but the fact that it's having problems doesn't actually mean that all of the things, the risk pool, the exchanges, the Medicaid expansion, all of the things that are really important about the Affordable Care Act, it doesn't actually say much about them. It doesn't say much about whether plans are going to be affordable. I mean, I think that's really the crux of the issue. Is this going to work?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Obamacare's rocky rollout, asking why the terrible start and what it will take to fix it. Jonathan Cohn is here from the New Republic. Jenny Gold of Kaiser Health News. Part of the reason people not happy, there were lots of assurances in the months leading up to the rollout, the October 1st rollout, that things would be fine. Here's a montage of statements by Health and Human Services Secretary taking heat lately, Kathleen Sebelius, over those months.
We're on track to flip the switch on October 1st.
We are on track to have the marketplace up and running on October 1st. I'm confident that we will be up and running and on track on October 1st.
Do you have contingency if the exchanges are not ready, up and running with a fully informed public by October 1st?
As I answered before, Congressman, we will be open for open enrollment October 1st.
So you can assure this committee there will be no further deadlines missed, no further delays in the implementation of the exchanges?
We are on track to meet the October 1st deadline.
Well, not true. Here's a frustrated would-be user, customer of healthcare.gov, a few days after that October 1st deadline, sharing her frustrations with WTLV-ABC in Jacksonville, Florida.
what are my options? What are the different plans out there? I mean, I want to be able to see. Just fix it, please. Add more servers, whatever.
We're going to talk in just a moment with an insurer trying to deal with the back end of the system right now. Jonathan Cohn, you have reported on some of what happened in those weeks leading up to October 1st. You've reported in some sharp detail about how the bureaucracy kind of got into duck and cover mode instead of fix and solve mode.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear if we're sort of doing the after-action report what happened. There was a communication breakdown. People who were had direct knowledge of what was happening, people working on the actual systems, had a sense that things were very unlikely to work well, if work at all, on October the 1st. You did not hear that at the highest levels. You did not hear that from Secretary Sebelius. You didn't hear that from the president. And it's clear now, and administration officials are sort of acknowledging this, that, you know, they didn't get that information. That information did not make its way up the food chain. And that's a management problem.
Well, but you say communications breakdown. That makes it sound like the phones didn't work. The phones and everything else worked just fine. People didn't want to tell them. You describe it as kind of CYA moment here. Cover your hinder. Nobody wanted to carry the hot potato up and reveal it.
Yes. No, exactly. Right. I mean, I think there was a, this is not working. We don't, you know, somewhere along the way, somebody didn't, there was, a, you know, in a bureaucracy, there are channels where the messages go through. And somewhere along the way, someone didn't want to convey the message. And, you know, I can't tell you where that was or when it was. I'm sure we will be reading about that and hearing about that in weeks to come. Mm-hmm. But it's clear to me that messages didn't make their way up. And it's clear to me that there were people sort of, you know, pointing fingers as it got closer and saying, well, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't my fault. And, you know, these are the sort of classic things we see in a bureaucracy. We see them in corporate bureaucracies too, by the way, as well as in government bureaucracies. But this is what happens. And, you know, it suggests, I think, looking back, there were management problems. The administration is going to have to take some responsibility for those. Whatever we think, whether we think this is a fiasco or not a fiasco, whether it ends up being an afterthought or a sort of serious problem going forward, you know, they messed up.
Fred and Jenny, sorry, please.
I would also add that the Obama administration is being less than transparent now. Presumably, they sort of know what's going on at this point with the website, but they're not really talking in detail about the actual flaws. And that's why so many experts are curious as to whether this is even possible to fix by Thanksgiving or December. So it's not like they didn't know before. Now they know and they're being totally transparent. They're still not really saying. And Politico today, I believe, called it the administration's bunker mentality, that they're keeping everything under wraps. How much did Secretary Sebelius know at the time? I'm not sure. There were experiments. There were tests done immediately before October 1st. Even with several hundred people trying to sign up, they still had crashes. So they knew there were problems. I mean, I think to suggest that that this was just a management problem and no one wanted to carry the hot potato may not be entirely right. I think there's also an effort to sort of downplay it. This is Obama's signature legislation, and the administration doesn't want it to look like a disaster. They want it to be a success. And I think it's hard sometimes to then come out and really talk about some fundamental flaws.
Polls say people want the coverage. The uninsured want the coverage. But you've got to make it work to make it available. And, of course, it's political all the way along the line. Wow. What a situation. Let's go to Xavier in South Burlington, Vermont. Xavier, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Just a couple comments I'd like to make and then get a reaction off the air. One, I've heard the term computer glitch used many times, or a few times anyway. It's a misnomer. There's no such thing as a computer glitch unless there's a major electrical storm that affects them. Computers do exactly what they're told to do by programmers and system developers. Two, as far as fixing a system, there are numerous studies that indicate that the effectiveness of the system decreases and the time and cost increases exponentially when a system has to be fixed after it's already been developed versus defining the requirements and designing according to meet them from the beginning. And third of all, these recent events don't inspire confidence in the security that would be required of such a system.
Why not? I mean, How does not working have to do with security?
Well, that's part of what gets designed into the system, I believe. And if there are so many apparent problems with what we've seen already, I haven't even heard that discussed at all, but one suspects that the problems would be system-wide, I guess.
Well, the pressure is on to have something up and working, and very soon, November's coming at us and deadline's coming. I guess a lot will be thrown at this, but plenty of problems to juggle here. I want to get the insurer's angle in this, because after all, what it's supposed to do, healthcare.gov, is funnel those who want insurance, and many want it, through to insurance companies who are prepared to take them on. With us right now from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Gene Cronin, Vice President of Marketing at Priority Health. It's the second largest healthcare insurer in Michigan. Mr. Cronin, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to join.
What's your experience been so far? Are you getting, you know, people flowing through ready to sign up?
Well, at this point, it's been more of a trickle than a flow. You know, the volume of enrollment has been lower than we anticipated, you know, and what consumers are telling us is widely what's being reported in the media, that they're struggling to access the marketplace and they're struggling to complete the application process.
Now, we've heard that once they get through or once their information gets through, there have been problems with it, spotty, people having to call back and sort of do it all over again on the phone. Are you running into that kind of situation?
We have had a couple of experiences where folks have submitted multiple applications because they didn't get the confirmation that they were expecting, so they hit submit or enrolled multiple times.
Sure, I've done that.
We're working with CMS, to resolve those issues on an individual basis, and we've actually, started reaching out to enrollees to confirm with them that, in fact, the information that they've submitted is indeed accurate, and that the plans that they've chosen are indeed those that they expected.
So help us understand your hopes here. I mean, people's motivations and incentives can be confusing sometimes. As a big insurer, are you hoping for this to work? Are you rooting for it not to work? What?
Well, Priority Health is part of an integrated health system, and our goal is to provide affordable health, access, quality health care to our members. So, the expansion of this to cover more people certainly is an objective of ours as well. But, we want to see, the un- and underinsured obtain coverage. But, certainly that does come at a cost.
So what's the water cooler or boardroom table conversation at Priority Health right now about the Affordable Care Act coverage and how it's coming, the prospects for it pulling together here and working out?
Well, it is still early in the process. As you said, we're 21 days in, and while the volume of enrollments is lower than we had expected, it is early, and part of what we had anticipated in these early stages is that folks would be doing more investigating and learning than actual shopping. So, it is still our expectation that as the technology issues get resolved, as we get closer to the deadlines, that we will start to see an increase in the number of enrollments.
Gene Cronin with Priority Health, one of the biggest insurers in Michigan. Thank you very much for joining us, Gene.
My pleasure, Tom.
All right, Jonathan, Jenny, you guys are on the ground reporting this closely. Jonathan, what's the scuttlebutt you're hearing about likely paths forward here? I mean, of course, we saw what fierce opposition there was in part to the Republican Party to the whole project. Those knives are going to be sharpening even as the administration struggles to get this up on the rails and working right. What are the scenarios for how this goes forward, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, if you're thinking about politically, obviously, the Republicans are going to exploit this. They are exploiting this. You will see hearings next week. Secretary Sebelius will go in front of Congress. I imagine she is going to take a lot of very tough questioning directed.
I thought
her
she was
way.
Not going to appear. Was that this week? She's not appearing.
She's not appearing this week because of a scheduling conflict or something
right.
like that.
Something more important.
Right. But she will be there next week. Mm-hmm. She will answer questions. And she should. I mean, look, I think there's a lot of Republicans who are asking hard questions as if they're upset that Obamacare isn't working when, in fact, they don't want Obamacare to exist. So, I mean, the amount of hypocrisy on display here is enormous. But, this is what congressional oversight is for, is to check on how the executive branch is doing. So I, for one, am looking forward to the hearings. And, I think we'll get some answers. But, again, I do keep coming back to the fact that I actually think remarkably the public is reasonably patient about this. And, you know, let's face it, the Republicans have not done themselves any favors lately. Nobody, I think, takes them that seriously when, you know, as a party that's really interested in right now in bending over backwards to help people get health insurance. So, you know, in that sense, the administration maybe has caught a break.
Jenny, the president yesterday himself saying openly that Republican critics of the Affordable Care Act should stop rooting for it to fail. At this point, I mean, the shutdown is over, and that was, an effort to shut it down and to shut Obamacare down. Do Republicans have ways and means to not just root for but propel this toward failure or to trip it up? Or are they spectators, Jenny, as this struggle to get it working just right goes on?
They voted so many times, dozens of times already, to defund and to get rid of this law. I mean, I think at this point we know it's moving forward. It's being implemented. This is happening. So perhaps this is more of a spectator sport. However, you know, there are certainly reasonable points to be made and questions to be asked about why this isn't working and some probing to be done, not only by Republicans, but by Democrats as well. I mean, Democrats, they voted for this thing and they own it. It's not just about Obama, who doesn't need to run for re-election. It's also 2014 is coming up very quickly. A lot of the folks who voted for this and sort of staked their political careers on the success of the new healthcare overhaul, they also need this to work. So it really isn't just Republicans who are going to be asking questions. I mean, Democrats are also, you know, they own this.
What are we learning as people, as that trickle and more, depending how you look at it or where you're applying, as it goes through? What are we learning about what it's likely to cost? The president emphasizing yesterday that it's affordable, it's a good deal. Is that what people are seeing as they do get on, when they do get on, Jenny?
You know, whether it's affordable depends on so many things, including your region where you live. The selection of plans completely varies by region. You may live in one place where only one insurer is offering plans on the exchange. You may live in another place where there's a dozen, and you have many, many options. So that's really going to depend. It's also going to depend for people how much of a subsidy they qualify for. People who earn close to four times the federal poverty level, who are a little bit higher income, they may see their rates going up, whereas people with a subsidy may see their rates going down. Same thing if you have a pre-existing condition and you've been paying very high rates because of that, you may see a very large decline in your premium rates. If you're a healthy young person and you've had a catastrophic plan that's been really cheap because, hey, you're healthy and the insurers wanted you in there, you may see your rates go up. So it's really going to vary. And one of the issues in the federal exchange thus far has been that people weren't able to see what their options were. You had to actually go through the application process to see what plans you could get and what subsidies you might be able to get to help you pay for that. That's changing right now. The administration is now setting it up so that you can actually sort of window shop and browse your plans. But I think this brings us back to the really fundamental question. Yes, the website is having problems. At some point in the next few months, websites get fixed. This will probably go away. But the real question is, are these plans going to be affordable for people, and are they going to sign up? I mean, that is the question that before long we're all going to be turning to.
We know what President Obama is rooting for here. Democrats line up pretty well behind him. We know public opinion polls saying a whole lot of people, a majority of the uncovered, want this to work out. What we talked with an insurance industry guy, but I wasn't clear to me, Jonathan. What about the incentives there? Are they rooting for this to work because it will funnel more business to them, or otherwise?
Oh, yeah. No, they're rooting for this to work. I mean, this is one of those interesting situations where when the law was being debated, there were plenty of insurers who were at very least skeptical, in some cases outright opposed to these changes. It was dramatically altering their business model for a whole sector of the business. But, you know, that's done now. And they've put money on the line. You know, they have plans out there. At this point, they have an enormous stake in the success of the system. And I actually think that's one reason to be optimistic, is that the insurers themselves can do a lot to help this. They can help on the technological side. They are, in fact, right now have been working with HHS on trying to straighten out the issues. They can offer their own expertise, which they have. And, you know, they can do a lot of outreach on their own, a lot of helping to get people enrolled. They have a huge stake in making this work, just like, for that matter, the hospitals do and lots of other parts of the healthcare industry. So there are a lot of people rooting for this to succeed. And I think that is actually, if you're looking for reasons for optimism, that's a big one.
Your overall prognosis, Jonathan, the reforms on the table here, do they come through ultimately with flying colors, or is there a real risk of a founder?
It's hard to know for sure. This is a technological issue, and I'm not an IT guy. But from what I'm hearing, you know, I'm a little optimistic.
A little optimistic. All right, Jenny Gold, I'm not sure that makes us all really fully comforted here about the future of healthcare in this country. What do you think? Prognosis for Obamacare as we look at this rollout?
I am giving it a solid wait and see. We just have to see what happens.
Wow. Whether you're patient or not, that sounds like a requirement of patience right there. Jenny Gold covers the healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News, joined us today from Washington. Jenny, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Jonathan Cohn in Ann Arbor, Michigan, senior editor at The New Republic. Jonathan, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.